Hello everyone, and welcome to episode 32. I wanted to share some exciting news again. So I've decided to open up my podcast to video calls so that I can communicate and share space with people all over the world. I realize that I simply can't be everywhere at once, and there's people's voices and stories that I want to share. So thank you for bearing with me while I transition into this new part. I will still be podcasting with people that I see face to face and run into on the road, so that's exciting. And today I got the chance to sit down with Kawabi, the main man and legend behind the movement The Peace Bus. And so in this episode, you'll get to hear his story about how he decided to fully embody the movement of peace and get active in his community. So I hope you all enjoyed this episode, and I would love for you to rate the episode and leave a written review. That would really help get this podcast out to the greater world. And of course, please, please, please take a photo of the episode you're listening to and tag at the Humans of Van Life on Instagram.
Hey, I just want to thank you for letting me come on the show and talk, you know, appreciate it.
Absolutely. So, I just found out that you have a podcast.
Yes, I do. It's a video podcast called The Peace Bus right now. We only have one episode up. The second episode will be coming up pretty soon here. People who want to watch it, they can go to thepeacebus.org to watch it. Right now, we're like in this weird hiatus period because we got some things in the works with doing the humanitarian aid for next month. Here in Tacoma, Washington, we're going to be giving out socks and blankets to people in need starting on December 1st. But we're writing and getting ready to film a pilot for a TV show, for a kids television show. So like, yeah, which we haven't announced yet. But yeah, we're like working with a production company, and we're hoping to pitch the show to PBS.
Amazing. Like, that's so good. Wow. Okay, cool. So yeah, why don't we just like start off by diving right in? I have a couple questions for you.
Cool.
So I'm just curious, like, where did you get the idea for the Peace Bus?
The Peace Bus, so the Peace Bus started in February of this year. So it's fairly recent somewhat, but my activism work has been about 3 years long. I was 3 years ago in grad school, and I mean, I was doing my thing. I was in grad school and I was working. And though these things are great, like it's good to be working, it's good to do grad school and, you know, be studying, but I felt like I wasn't doing enough for my community. Like I was living day to day, doing my thing, but I wasn't feeling, for lack of better terms, I wasn't feeling spiritually fulfilled. So I was like, okay, what can I do for people around me, or how can I engage with my community?
Mm.
And so I'd always been familiar with Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, and Gandhi, people like this, but I was trying to research activists of our modern times, right? So I came across this guy named Brian. He's a peace activist from London, England. And basically what he did, he was living his normal life, and he decided he wanted to make a stand for peace. And so he camped outside of Parliament Square. He camped outside of Parliament Square in London, England for 11 years, promoting peace and love for humanity. And he was just out there and had a little peace camp. And people would stop by his camp and talk to him about what they felt we could do to bring more unity in the world today. So I was like, okay, well, if Brian can stay out for 11 years, the least I can do is I can, you know, make a couple posters and go to my park. And so that's how I started doing activism or peace campaigning. I wouldn't necessarily call it activism because I haven't gotten arrested or done anything like great, like, you know, something like really for the cause, you know, I'm just promoting peace. But so I went to my local park and I had these posters. One said, "War is not the answer. Say no to violence." The other one said, "Love, peace and justice for all." And I would just sit there at the park. I had classical music playing and people would come up to me and they're like, "What is this?" And I was like, "I'm just having conversations with people about peace and what it means." And so I did that for about 2 months. And then I was out there one Saturday and someone attacked me. Someone came up, ran up on me, and was violent. They didn't hit me, but they tore up my posters, broke my table, and they were mentally not stable. They were unstable mentally. It was someone with schizophrenia, I believe. And so after that, I was like, well, I don't know about going to my local park. Let me take this elsewhere, which was a good thing. Like, it was a bad incident, but it compelled me to go to different parts of my town, Tacoma. So I started doing that, and then I went to Seattle, and then I went to Vancouver, BC, I went to San Francisco, and just walked around these major cities, talked to people about peace. Then my friend who was stationed in the Netherlands, he was like, you should come to Europe and do the same thing. And I was like, no, like, I'm not gonna do that. But he was like, I really think you should do it. I think you could personally get something out of it, and you could, you know, engage with people and learn what people have to say about peace. And so I did that. I went to England and Ireland and the Netherlands, of course. I went to Germany and Brussels, Belgium and Iceland. And so I just talked to people about peace. I got back, and then my friend, Kevin Wilford, he's a producer. So he was like, you've learned all these different things about peace from people, you know, in Europe, in the States. What are you going to do about it now? You got this knowledge, and how are you going to tell people about it? I was like, I don't know. Maybe I'll hold a conference or something. And he was like, no, I think you should do a podcast, you know, engaging with people and getting the word out about what you've learned. And I never considered myself a podcaster, but like most things, when you're first starting out, you don't know much about it. But as you work at it, you learn the skill, right? You get better at it. So I started off doing that. It was called the Real Peace Podcast. So that was our first thing. Mm. And another inspiration that came across me was this guy named A.B. Nathan. I don't know if you've heard of him either, but he was an Israeli humanitarian in the 60s. And what he did, he was a pilot, and a plane called Peace One. And what he did was he flew the plane from Tel Aviv to Egypt in promotion of having Arabs and Jews come together and in peace, in harmony. So I was like, oh my God, this guy's amazing. So I started flying. I had a goal of being the first person to circumnavigate the globe in promotion of world peace. It's still a dream of mine, but I started doing flight lessons. So I took about seven or eight flight lessons, and I did ground school. I did about 3 weeks in ground school, which is like the academic portion of aviation. And I was determined. I was like, this is it. Like, I'm going to fly for peace. But I found out that flight lessons in flight school is very expensive. So I was like, okay, can't do this right now. What's something more feasible? And that's how I came about with the peace bus. So I was like, okay, well, I still want to spread peace, but I have a driver's license. Don't have a pilot's license, but I have a driver's license. So I wanted to get the Volkswagen bus at first. That was my goal. And here in the States, like any vehicle that's made before 1982, you don't have the VIN number. You can't check the Carfax. So I didn't know what I was getting myself into with the old Volkswagen bus. So I was like, okay, well, I don't know anyone who personally has one. I'm not going to buy the bus, and it breaks down first week I get. So I looked at other vans. Yeah, I looked at other vans that are similar to it. And that's how I came across the Mitsubishi 1988 van, which I purchased for the Peace Bus and just made it bright blue so people could see it. It has peace on the side. It's very plain, but it's plain for a purpose, so that people will get their eyes glued towards peace. So hopefully just peace will be in their mind, you know?
Wow. So, sorry, my dad keeps calling me. my dad keeps trying to call me. That's fine. So it's so interesting to me, like when I hear your voice and when I hear your mission, you're fired up. Like I can feel it. I can feel it across the screen, and I love it. And so I'm wondering, when did that fire ignite within you? Like normally, and correct me if I'm wrong, but most people who have a passion, you know, like an overcome story, they have a passion towards something they feel and believe in so strongly, it's because something had happened to them, and that's where they overcome, right? They fight for the right. And so Is there something that ignited that within you?
It's interesting that you asked me that, because I was interviewed by a lady about a month ago who runs some of the homeless aid organization locally in Tacoma. And she sat down with me. She wanted to know why I was doing what I was doing. And she was like, I want to know your why, similar to what you're saying. And honestly, I don't really know. I can't pinpoint it. I've always been interested in helping others. And I don't know. I feel like this is the right thing to do, you know? Like, I think it comes down to, it's like, if I wasn't, as far-fetched as this could sound, at one point in my life, it was sort of like an identity crisis I was going through. I was trying to figure out who I was. Everyone tries to figure out who they are in this world. Mm-hmm. And it always changes. But at one point, I was really trying to figure out who I was as a person, as a human being. And I was advised by a college professor. He said, Kwabi, what you need to do is you need to go on vacation. You need to go on vacation. And on vacation, think about not what do you want to be, but what kind of person do you want to be? So I was like, oh, I've never heard, like, okay, everyone wants to know, like, what they want to be. Like, I want to be a doctor, a lawyer, or something like that. But, like, who do you want to be? That's a different kind of question. So I did that. I took that advice. I went, me and my friends, we did a log cabin trip. So we went out to the hills, the mountains. And in that time, it was very quiet and serene. And I thought to myself, like, what kind of person do I want to be? And really, to me, there's no better feeling than peace. To have that, to be calm and to feel collected and to feel safe and also to be respected by others and to respect other people. And so I was like, well, out of anything, I want to feel peace and I want to have other people feel peace. So it wasn't like an incident that happened where I thought, you know, like I had some sort of struggle and I had to rise above it. But I feel like innately it's something that's really a part of me and my identity pieces. Yeah.
That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing. And how has the community's perception of you been? Like, have you found that people are allowing and accepting you for what you're doing?
Yeah, it's been nuts. It's been amazing. So after creating the Peace Bus and around February time, we started doing humanitarian aid with the bus. So basically using the bus as a vehicle to distribute socks and blankets to people in need on the street. So we did our first sock drive in March, winter was sort of ending. And then after we were done with the sock drive, we were sort of figuring out what's next for the Peace Bus. And so we were doing the podcast, the Real Peace Podcast, in my apartment. And Kevin, my producer, was like, what if we fuse the two? What if we use the Peace Bus as a mobile podcast? And we'll travel, we'll use it, and we'll talk to people on the street about what peace means to them, and also give out socks at the same time and blankets. And I was like, that sounds like an awesome idea. And at the time, this last spring, and it's still an issue today, but the United States, our media was really hot on the topic of immigration. It still is. So we live on the West Coast, and though the Mexican border is a long ways from Seattle, it's close, relatively. If you keep on going down I-5, you'll eventually get there in, you know, a couple of days. So we thought of doing the Peace Bus journey to the Mexican border. That was after the sock drive, that was the next thing. So we raised funds. We had people all over Washington, all over the United States, donate to our cause so that we could. The goal was to be able to travel to the border of Mexico and interview Border Patrol agents about what was going on down there, which was very optimistic because why would Border Patrol agents meet with, like, well, there's like random dudes, you know, like, why would they meet with us for what? Especially with the press, you know, there was a lot of flack going on, there was a lot of bad press for them that's going on. And that's in some cases, it's just justified of what's going on down there. But I emailed the Border Patrol, San Diego Border Patrol, and I asked them, I was like, hey, I'm Kwabi with the Peace Bus. Me and my friends were wondering if we could come down and interview guys. And they're like, no, you can't. And I was like, yeah, that's what I expect. Like, why would you allow us to? So, but we were still optimistic about it. So we drove from Tacoma. We went to Portland, San Francisco. We went to L.A. We went to San Diego, of course. And along the California coast, we give out socks and blankets to people in need in each city. And we stayed with host families, people we didn't even know. Which was amazing, which was the craziest and most beautiful thing, because people often ask me, they're like, oh, well, how was the trip? What did you learn from the trip? And out of all the aid that we gave, out of interviewing, being able to even interview the Border Patrol, which was nuts how that happened, the most important thing we found out was there's love out there. There's tons of love out there, and people are willing to give it, because we stayed with people we didn't know. We stayed, well, on our way back, we stayed in Boise, Idaho. We stayed on a dairy farm. And there was Connie and Hans Bruin, and they treated us like we were their kids. They cooked breakfast and lunch and dinner for us. And Hans ran the local fair in Boise, and they gave us money to go to the fair like we were their kids. They're like, yeah, have a good time. Here's 70 bucks. Just go ride the ride. Like, what is? It's just, it's amazing. It's amazing.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's nuts. It's nuts. And so after. We interviewed the Border Patrol there, which was a very interesting experience. when we got down to San Diego, when we got to LA, my buddy Kevin was like, you should just call the Border Patrol and see what they say. So I called them and I was like, hey, I'm Kwabi from the Peace Bus. We're wondering, we're in LA. We're going to head down to San Diego. We were wondering if we could talk to some of you guys. And he was like, no, you can't. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, I understand. He was like, well, what's the Peace Bus? What is that? And I was like, oh, it's like, we're doing humanitarian aid and we interview people about peace. And he was like, email me your website and your Instagram. And I was like, okay, cool. So I emailed it to him, and about an hour they got back to me, and they were like, yeah, we'll let you ride in the truck with us. We'll let you ride in the truck, but no interview. And I was like, okay, cool. So then we get down to San Diego. We went to the border. We actually saw the port of entry and actually saw the fence and everything. It's all on thepeacebus.org. It's wild. It's crazy that this actually happened. But they met us, me and two Border Patrol officers. It was me and the rest of my peace crew. And we were in the truck with them. And I had my phone out. I think they thought I was recording already, but I wasn't. I really wasn't. I was just sitting there. And I asked them, I was like, you guys, do you mind if I ask you some questions and record it? And they look at each other, and one of the officers looks at me, and he sees I have my phone out, and he was like, sure. He was like, sure, ask me any questions whatsoever. We'll give you our honest answers. Shoot, you know, just make sure that you give us space. And we asked them all the questions we thought people wanted the answers to, and they gave us the answers. And all of that's on our website as well. So
that was wild. Yeah. That's incredible.
Yeah. So when we got back from the trip, that's when it got really crazy. So our local news station reached out to me, and I was on this show called Take Five on King 5 News, and then also another new show called New Day with Margaret Larson, which was nuts that happened as well. And then I was on another show, Take Five show, and that's when, you know, more of the press started happening. And then after that, we decided we wanted to tell people about what we had learned on the journey. Mm. So we decided to make an elementary school tour, and that's what we're currently doing. We're going to elementary schools in the area of Tacoma and Seattle, and we're talking to kids about nonviolence, anti-bullying, and how we can get along interpersonally and treat people with kindness. And so that's the next thing we're doing.
Holy shit, man, you are a rock star. Honestly, I hold my hands up to you and your team. It's just so amazing to hear you doing the damn thing. You know, like, this isn't just an idea that a couple of you guys are talking about. Like, you're out there on the front lines making it happen. I love it.
Appreciate it. Thank you. We're trying.
That's so incredible. And so on this podcast, I actually originally started this podcast. Sort of a long story, and people probably heard it 100 times, but basically I was so sick and tired of people without homes being stigmatized, you know, and being pushed to the side and judged and treated differently. And I myself experienced that when I was living in a van in a city. I lived in Victoria, so just up from you. And, you know, I wanted to start getting people who are living this lifestyle, getting their voices heard and seen, right? And so I'm just curious, like, you have been in the Tacoma area and you've been interacting with people without homes. And what's your experience with them been like?
So I'm for the my actual job, I'm a case manager for a mental health organization. So basically what I do for my actual job is I help people who are on the street access social resources in the community. Mm-hmm. So most of my clients are without homes. And I've been doing case management for about 5 years. Mm. I think the biggest misconception, and this is seen time and time again, you talked about, you know, people being treated differently. The biggest problem is severe dehumanization. Dehumanization of those who live on the street and are without a home. They're treated horrible with other people within the community.
Yes.
What we need to hone in on is that they're our neighbors. These are our fellow human beings living with us. Mm-hmm. Though they may not have a home, but they're your neighbor. Mm-hmm. And we have to see them like this. See ourselves like this. It's not even a we and them thing. We have to help each other because we're part of this community together. And so when I'm engaging with anyone, no matter if they're on the street or they have a home or what have you, I try to keep in mind that these are my neighbors. These are my people. We're trying to build more community, and I feel like if we can see that through the lens of each and every person being our neighbor, we'll be better off. And so that's the takeaway mainly with who I work with and who we try to help here and serve in our community.
Dude, you're speaking my language. Like, this is so refreshing. I knew we had to talk. So I'm a registered nurse. I'm not sure if you've heard of the Kool-Aid Community Health Center in Victoria. So it's basically, it is the only, pretty much, well, no, it's the main clinic for people without homes and people who use substances, and it's the lowest barrier clinic. So everybody from the street comes to us. So as a nurse, I was a student nurse at this time, I was playing this role where the people that my clients I would work with, were the same fucking people sleeping beside me, because I lived in a van as I was finishing up my nursing degree. And the people beside me were either building homes out of cardboard, a tent, anything, in the same park that I was sleeping in. And so I was like, what am I doing here? Like, and I love what you said about you've been to grad school, you know, and you've played this role. So I become an RN now, right? And this is my background. But what am I really doing? And that's where I was starting to get tripped out, because I can only do so much within a system. Mm-hmm. And I'm playing those rules. And so I've decided, I'm not practicing nursing right now. And I'm dedicated to sharing the stories of everybody and bringing to light. Like, if one person listens to this podcast and thinks differently about the next person they see in a van or on the street, then my job's successful.
Accomplished. Mission accomplished. Yeah.
And so I totally relate with you in being a case manager. Like, I work very like hand in hand with case managers, and that's part of our job as well, to get people who are on the street access to resources. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I just so nice to talk to somebody else in my field and who shares the same belief and comes from the same lens. These are our people. They were sleeping beside me. They were the people that would collect my bottles and my recycling. I had my own personal recycling people.
Wow.
Like,
wow.
I would share my food with them, and, you know, it's just like, these are my fucking friends.
Yeah. And we have to see. Yeah, I think oftentimes people assume that, we put up barriers, thinking of safety, thinking of what's going to protect us from the other. But I feel, for two different reasons, this is a messed up sort of ideology. Because when we ignore people, the problem only gets worse. Mm. We're human. Mm. It'd be different if we're not dealing with humans. We're dealing with humans that are just like us. Mm. No one likes to feel like they're dirt. No one likes to feel disrespected, dehumanized. It's the worst thing that can happen to a human being. So when that happens, when people are continuously dehumanized, that's when we, being mentally disabled, mentally, it's horrible. It's horrible as far as you're going to do on someone's mental state. We have to bridge that gap by learning about other people and engaging with them so they feel included. But not only that, they feel respected, and that's the most important thing, that people feel respected, so we can work with them and build that community that we've been losing. We've been losing it out here, and we have a lot of people working for the betterment of the community, though. But it's a process. It's a process. Yeah,
totally. And if I think about like the fundamentals that I've learned in nursing, three things to share: every single person wants love and belonging. That's it. It's rooted in our DNA. We want love and we want to belong. And the second biggest thing and misconception is, for example, in the hospital and in the mental health unit where I've worked as well, there's an idea that people who are mentally unstable are dangerous and lash back. And the truth is the primary cause of that is perceived disrespect. So if a human is, you know, is feeling disrespected, that's when they're going to lash out.
Yeah, right. You're right. Well, sure. I definitely agree. It's, because I mean, it is the same as us. Anyone, if you feel disrespected, you're going to get upset. And so we have to be aware of of how we're interacting with others, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's what we're doing with the elementary school tour. Mm-hmm. We're talking to kids and getting them prepared and getting them equipped with empathy, with understanding, with how to go about interacting with each other in a more kind way. Mm-hmm. And that's what the show we're trying to write. We're getting ready to produce this show. It's gonna be about that. We don't see this often enough in kids' television, talking about incarceration, talking about homelessness, and talking about poverty.
Yes,
I can't remember the last time I had a television show talking about poverty. Like what is that? So, getting kids to humanize people that are often dehumanized in our community, and relaying to them the importance of serving the community that they live in. That's what the Peace Bus show will eventually be about when we get it rolling. Hopefully, we get picked up. We'll see.
That's incredible. Oh, let me know if you want support or anything in that. Like, I'd be happy to support you guys if I could somehow. I love it.
Thank you. Thank you.
And so what's been your experience with this whole movement of van life? Like, do you have anything to say about that?
Oh, ooh, van life. Well, I'm new to it. This is my first year. Yeah. I'm not advanced in it. But I think it's commendable. We don't need so much stuff.
Mm.
Our footprint economically for those who take so much in our environment, you know, we don't need most of the stuff that we have. And I feel that van life, it's synonymous with minimalistic lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very commendable. For myself, I think I would consider myself a minimalist. And it's not necessarily that I don't have lots of stuff. Like, I have quite a bit of stuff, but I don't need it. Like, I don't feel, if someone, honestly, to be frank, if I came home one day and most of my stuff was gone, I probably wouldn't trip, because it's just stuff. It's just stuff. And, you know, stuff can be replaced.
Mm.
But I feel like the most important thing is experience.
Mm.
And van life is about experience. It's about traveling. It's about A to B, B to C. It's not about being stagnant. It's about growing and engaging with others and experiencing life. And I feel like that's what's so cool about van life. And I'm looking forward to contributing more with van life and having the Peace Bus be a part of that culture. And so I'm excited. I'm new, but I'm excited.
God love you. I love it. And so here's a crazy idea. What do you think about the homeless community? Like, what do you think about utilizing vans as ways for people with less resources to get their feet on the ground, per se, or get, you know what I mean? Like, so I was living in a van because I couldn't afford rent in my city. Yeah, it was illegal to be living in a van. How fucking ironic.
Wow.
There's nowhere else for me to go. And so we had several run-ins with the law enforcement, and they would hand out pamphlets to us, and they would say, you can't park here overnight. But you can build a shelter from, it was 11 p.m., but you have to be out by 6 a.m. So I can't sleep in my vehicle. My vehicle's allowed to be parked here. I can't sleep in it, but I can sleep in a shelter outside the van in the lawn from 11 p.m. till 6 a.m. But I would have to build a shelter, then I have to pack it up in the morning, and I have to make my way to school to finish off my nursing degree. Something's not right there.
I feel like oftentimes cities, they're funneling people in a certain lifestyle, in a certain way that they have to go. Anything that's out of that quote unquote normalcy is honestly it's triggered. It's looked on as something that's other. And so I feel Well, that has to do with the city litigation, people fighting for the rights of others.
Mm.
In order to end that, it's discrimination. That's what that is.
Yes.
There has to be a place for people who want to be able to have a van and live in the city. There has to be waves of in order to let that happen. When I was in Ireland, in Dublin, Ireland, I talked to a man who was homeless, and he was. I forget which bridge it was, but he was on the bridge. He was just hanging out there, and we had a conversation. And he was like, "I don't know where I'm going to sleep tonight." He was like, "I have a tent, but the place we can't pitch our tent anywhere in the city versus a designated area, and that area is very dangerous. Not crime wise, but there's lots of sewage that comes into that area, and it makes it unsanitary for people to live. And he was explaining how they're just constantly ignored by the local government. And I feel it's, I don't know. And as far as the solution to that, I think we just need to be able to speak out. Mm-hmm. And that's what you're doing. Things like this, you know, mm-hmm. podcasting, explaining to people what's going on, because oftentimes people don't know. And that's the thing about linking people with other people. So oftentimes if we are not directly affected by something, we don't think about it. We don't worry about it because it doesn't bother us. Yeah. It doesn't affect us. But that's a lie. That's a lie because it does affect us. People being outside and being discriminated against and being dehumanized affects us. Is that these are our neighbors. This is our community. And it feeds off on us, you know. If someone's upset, constantly being discriminated against, that makes them angry. That makes mm-hmm. them upset. And if we want to make a happy community, we have to listen to people that aren't being listened to. And I feel, you know, that's a huge thing. We have to listen more.
That's it. Listen. Again, we want to be seen and heard as humans. And something that comes up for me right now as we're speaking is, I found it so interesting navigating the system, you know, like working on the front lines, and people are complaining because the shelters are full, but then people are complaining because there's too many people on the streets. And then people are complaining when people get unique and crafty and live in a van or a vehicle. It's like nobody's fucking happy.
Yeah, here's the thing. We spend, in the U.S., we spend billions and millions of dollars for defense. Here's my thing. I don't necessarily know the answer towards, obviously, I think if we build more shelters, because the shelters here in Tacoma are full. They're full right now. And they're doing a tent ban that starts on December 1st, which is going to displace tons and tens of people. And I don't know where they're going to go. But the solution can be found. If we're spending tons of money on defense, why can't we have a little bit of that money go towards solving the problems that are in our community? Martin Luther King explained that. That's exactly, it's pretty much like a quote for quote what he said. He said, we spend millions of dollars of defense, but we can have money be put towards ending slums. We could. And it comes down to us to have that voice be heard about what we want. And the people want to end poverty. We want to find solutions to have people live a better and more fruitful life. And that to be the new aim for the future, 2020, and for the future ahead of us. We need to listen to the people. That's what we want.
Yeah, absolutely. So for this show that you're considering, would you be allowing people that you cross paths with to have their voices shared, or would it be primarily you and your team?
So the show is. It'd be actors. It'd be me and some puppets. It's like because we're like Sesame Street.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like that. But in the mode of it being a TV show, we're working on humanization. So, for example, we're like the first episode deals with a man who was incarcerated. But now he's working to better his life now that he's out of prison. And he talks about how his friends and family helped him to be who he is now. Mm. So we're honing in on friendship and the importance of that. Not just like, it's nice to be a good friend, but how does being a good friend impact your friends? How does that work? For the following episode, we're talking about someone who is homeless at a park and how people are angry at him being at the park. Mm. And they just want him to leave. But they realize eventually that this person in the park ended up being a classmate to someone who wanted him to leave. Mm. And so that's humanizing. Oh, this used to be my classmate. This is not just someone who's on the street. This is someone that I know, that I knew, that I laughed with, I cried with, you know? Mm. So it's about humanization. And if we can show kids the importance of that early on, but hopefully when they get older, they'll be able to realize how important those ethics are and be able to practice them in the future.
Nice. I see. Oh, that's awesome. What a cool idea you have.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's so great.
Yeah, we'll see how it pans out. Next month is when we're going to begin shooting. Right now, we're just getting the script ready, and we're going to be working with a local production team and See how it goes.
Do you know the quote? I'm pretty sure it's by the Dalai Lama, but it goes something along the lines of inner peace creates outer peace.
No, I haven't heard that one. I like that one, though. It's cool.
So that's something I really believe in. I the more work you can do on yourself in creating inner peace, the more outer peace there is. And that's why so many Tibetan monks and stuff, they organize events where they meditate together. You know, because if each person started doing work on themselves, working through their traumas, working through their old stories, patterns, beliefs, and coming to peace within, if everybody started doing that, that's how we can create a massive amounts of outer peace.
That makes sense. I agree with that notion. I also want to add that finding inner peace is a result of having one's essential needs. And that includes food, clothes, and shelter. And also purpose. But that's something that when I was interviewed by New Day on King 5 News, Margaret Larson asked me what, you know, what are you getting out of interviewing people about what peace means? And a theme that has been circling as I'm interviewing people has been people's essential needs, food, clothes, and shelter. If one is allowed the opportunity to have these things, peace of mind sets in. Because when you don't have those things, you're thinking about survival. You're not necessarily living. You know, if you're worried about where your food is coming, you know, every hour, every second, how can you go about, you know, channeling that inner peace? And so I really think that to create a more healthier world, a healthier community, a healthier country, that we have to provide people their essential needs. And that's not just me. That's people who I've interviewed. It's sort of like a consensus that's happened through interviewing people about peace.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for pulling that in. I think that's fucking essential. And then if you think about it on the physiological piece of that, when you don't get your basic needs met, right? Like on Maslow's hierarchy of needs, food, water, shelter, you switch into the sympathetic nervous system. So you're in fight or fright. You're not able to be at peace. Like, you're not able to be in the parasympathetic system. You're in fight or flight. So it's basic survival. So I totally agree with you. And then we have all these people walking around that are in fight or flight. And it's like, yeah, how could you get to a peaceful state there?
Yeah. So right now we're doing the elementary school tour, trying to instill those values and talk to kids about what that means. Oftentimes when we're... So we went to elementary school, Lister Elementary School in the east side of Tacoma just last month. And the angle that I go about when I engage with the kids is I'm a dummy. Like, I don't know anything. I want to hear you guys. What do you guys have to say about peace? And educate me. So there's a lot of give and take. And that's how peace is. I forget the quote. I believe it's an actual poem, actually. But it talks about... listen to everyone, even the ignorant, for they too have a story. Everyone has a story to tell, and you can learn from anyone. And so it's time. A very important thing that I often try to implement in my life is to close my mouth and to think and to listen to other people. Because never in the history of mankind has one been offended at someone listening to them. Like, the power of listening is immense. Because if you're respecting them, you're respecting... Whoever's, when someone's talking to you and you're not, like, there's two different kind of listening, I feel. There's listening, and you have something to say, and you're waiting for that person to stop talking. And then, which, I mean, it happens. I feel like naturally it happens. But if we can sort of get away from that mode so much and really listen to someone, and we may not know the answer. They may be asking us a question or relaying to something, like telling us something that they need help with, and we might not know the answer of how to help them. But the fact that we're just present with them and we're listening goes a long way. It helps them to be calm. It helps them to be able to feel that they're being respected and humanized. So I don't know how I went from there, from the schools to the humanization of listening, but I don't know.
That's awesome. My mind works like that too. Yeah, gotcha. But that's what you're doing. You're out there humanizing. So then just maybe to wrap it up a little bit, what could people do to either support you in the peace bus, or what are little things people could do in their own communities to contribute to this movement?
So speaking to the first person with the peace bus, message me. If you have a talent or you do something that you think that, you know, could help us, message me. It doesn't have to be monetary. It doesn't have to be giving aid, those things out. But I am always trying to network and hear about the talents people have and how can we can collaborate. Mm. So email me, message me on Instagram. I want to have a conversation with you. And then as far as what people can do in the community, the real answer in helping the community, it yes, you can donate to your local, you know, Red Cross or rescue mission, but I feel like the interpersonal connection is very important. Every month, if like, for example, for Tacoma, every month, if every person budgeted for a few socks, a few Lunchables, maybe like four Lunchables, you know, or a couple of socks, and then every month gave out a few to people on the street. If everyone did that, there'd be no more hungry people, or there'd be no people without socks in all of Tacoma. And it would take maybe half the people of Tacoma. So we all have an opportunity to help, and it doesn't take too much. How much is a couple of small packages of like a kid's meal, you know, something like that? Like, I don't know, do you have Lunchables in Australia?
I haven't seen any here, but in Canada, where I'm from, we definitely have Lunchables.
Okay, yeah. So a Lunchables, like $3.
Yeah.
You get three of them throughout the month. You give them out, mm-hmm. And that's feeding people within your community. That's helping your community. And you don't have to, some people argue about time. It doesn't take any time to help people out.
I mean, so. It takes the same amount. It takes less time and less money than it does to stand in a Starbucks line and get a latte.
Bam. Bam. There it is, Nikki. There it is.
Ain't that the truth, though? I hate to say it, but it's the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's sad, but it's so true, yeah.
Aw. Well, is there anything else you'd like to share before? I don't want to take too much of your time.
One last thing. Every second and every hour, we have the ability to love someone. Do it. If you're questioning, I don't know if I should, do it. Because you might not have that chance again. And it's always feels good to experience love. And so if you have the chance to do it, please, by all means, do it.
Amazing, Kwabi. And do you have kids yourself?
No, I don't have any kids. I have no girlfriend, no kids. I'm just working. I have a nephew who's three, and I see him often. But no kids yet. I will, though.
Yeah.
So I feel once I get the Peace Bus up and running, then I'm gonna settle down and have a family. Which I'm excited for. But no kids yet.
I can feel that. Like, I can feel your energy. You're such a family man. You're gonna make an amazing dad. Honestly.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining us here. And I know this isn't going to be our last time connecting. I'm sure you and I are going to be in contact.
Cool. I hope so. That would be wonderful. That would be wonderful. Thank you for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Amazing. All right. And I'll put your links below so people can reach out and message you and send you an email or however they need to get in contact with you.
Yeah, I want to have a conversation with the people. That'd be awesome. Thank you.
Okay. Much love to you.
Much love to you as well, Nikki. Thank you.
Okay. See you, Kwabi. Bye-bye. Wow. What a truly inspiring and motivating conversation from Kwabi. I feel so blessed to have opened up this podcast to phone calls and video calls, because the honest truth is I can't be everywhere. And there are so many people's stories that I want to hear and I want to sit down with. And I've just realized that I had a huge blockage to doing technical calls, because I love the energy I pick up from the people I sit with. But I just decided to change that mindset, and now I'm able to do that through videoing. I've been using Skype, and it feels so real to me, almost as if the person is sitting there. So it feels very authentic and yeah. So thank you so much for being patient for this first call. I wasn't sure how the volume was going to turn out or the sound quality, but sounds good to me so far. And again, Kwabi, so much love to you. Thank you for joining us here and taking time out of your day. And you heard the man, you guys. there is no excuses. Donate a Lunchable. Donate some socks. Like, how many socks do you have in your drawer? It's called community for a reason. We live in communities. That's what cities are. Find your community. Take a moment. When you're at the gas station, talk to the person beside you. You know, when you're standing in line and you're impatient trying to get through to pay your groceries, take a moment and talk to that person. Because if I've learned one thing, it's that you never know what kind of impact. You never know what kind of impact you're going to make on another person. And you could very well brighten that person's day or make their week. Thanks so much, you guys, for joining as usual. I'm very grateful for all of you.